Well, quite appropriately, we will call this a panel of one. The doctrine of universal unity and causation. So how do we begin such a lofty subject? Where do we begin? Well, we're told, well, begin where we are. And so where are we? Well, you're there. I'm here. That seems like we're separate. So how can we even begin to consider this doctrine of universal unity and causation? Well, if we sit and we look where we are, we look around us, and what do we see? We see different units of life. We look in nature, we see trees, we see birds, we see animals. They're different units of life. They're unities, we could call them, but they are units of intelligence and of life. So we investigate further, and we look out around us, and we look within us, and what do we see? We see these bodies that stand erect, that walk, that talk, that enable us to communicate with this material world. So that's a unity. Well, if we keep on going back, you know, the Earth is a unity, the solar system is a unity. But where do we derive this thinking from? We certainly don't look at it from the bottom up, that we've evolved from darkness into light. And we have to begin truly with the one reality, that we need to talk about God. We need to have a frank conversation about God. Because as theosophists, we feign use that word God because it conjures up all kinds of images in our mind. But let us not mislead you. God is not a being. Okay? He's not a being, because that would limit God. And God is limitless. God is eternal. God is boundless. And it is unchanging. That is a theosophical concept of God. But we'll stop using that word because it's not quite appropriate, because God, the word, is limiting. It is, the correct word is absolute. It is unknowable. Our intellect cannot comprehend it, because that which is limitless cannot be comprehended by the limited. However, we have the seed within us to function as that eternal oneness. Well, how do we do that? Well, if it is ever existing, we must be a part of it. We must be living in it. We are surrounded by it. So that all these different forms of life that we see are manifestations of it. So how could that be? Well, we're given an analogy or a correspondence. We are told to imagine a great breath. Well, this is how the universe comes forward. From the unknown, unmanifested, into manifestation. Now, when spirit appears, so does substance. Spirit and substance are one principle. So when that breath comes forward, it is creating motion as well. And that motion creates a cause. And that cause, effect, and then a reaction. So here, this is how the universe manifests itself, through this eternal absolute motion. Everything is set into motion, and everything that we see manifest is a result of that one absolute deific principle. There is nothing that manifests that is not of this universal principle. So, let us look backward. We're here in this physical plane, but we have a physical form. But we are told that we're not a linear being. We are a septenary being. And that there are other planes of our being that we are not conscious of in this waking moment. We are alive and conscious on the astral plane as well. We just do not register it all the time. But we can register, you know, that aspect of that plane on which things are formulated, where ideas are become actions. And there is the principle of life and of the astral that form this medium in which we live and operate. And the driving force of life is our passions and desires. And desire first arose in it. And then there's the intelligence of the universe. And then there is that which comes after, or that which embodies the entire manifested consciousness, or Buddhi. There is that one. It can't be multiplied. There's always that one. And everything comes forth from that one. You look at mathematics. Everything comes from the one. So this one is self-existent and self-sufficient. And we see it manifested in many, many ways. But in the human kingdom, or we shouldn't say that in the human kingdom, but in the manifestation of what we understand as God, or as a deific principle. But from that, we have that deific principle plus substance. And through that substance, we have the effect of power and will and imagination and thought, spirit, consciousness, ether. All these are aspects of this one. So in man, this universal unity manifests as a being. We are a manifestation of that universal unity. Now, what is that universal unity? It's unchanging. It is changeless. It is the observer. So we are asked, is there anything within us or about us that is unchanging, that is eternal, that we can identify from our earliest childhood, of our earliest consciousness of being, I am I. That conscious moment when we realized that we were alive and living. It's now. Here we have grown older, perhaps wiser, but we have experienced many, many things in our life. We have been the witness to that. We are ever the witness. We are not the bodies. We are not these circumstances. We are that one. Self-existent and self-sufficient. And we are not subject to change, not the eternal aspect of our nature. So, the unity is a conscious realization of spirit. If you are a gross materialist and you deny the existence of spirit, it is very difficult for you to see the unity of life. You see the separateness. You don't see the interconnectedness. We are a universe of cooperation, not competition. So, why are we here? What is happening? Well, this motion, this outward breathing continues. It is ceaseless. And here we are, a product of that ceaseless motion. We have been the accumulation of intelligences that brought together the accumulated intelligence of the lower kingdoms into a working form that is able to express higher intelligences. Higher intelligences? Yes, our eternal nature. That is what we truly are. We are not these bodies. We use these bodies. We use this mind. We use our will and imagination to create a new and better world. Our spirit is our will and imagination. Unity can be imagined if we can imagine ourselves, or we can imagine that oneness. We can imagine space. We can imagine expanding our heart to fill up the universe as we know it. The mind can expand. It is limitless. It is a tool of the absolute, of that higher man, that higher mind. So, as this breath goes forward, it creates cause, effect, and reaction. And this is where we are. We're the result of that cause and effect and reaction. The difference being is that we are now self-conscious. Before, we were moved along by natural impulse. That spiritual essence drives us forward to higher planes of evolution. But once we've become self-conscious, we begin making choices. We can choose to cooperate with life and with nature, or we can compete with life and nature and ignore that which is unpleasing or that which we do not want to look at. We have a responsibility to this earth, because this earth is alive, and this earth gave us these bodies on which we are communicating on this physical plane. So, karma and reincarnation are only natural processes of this one unknowable principle. Everything comes forth from that. There is nothing that is not that. It's like with the old Greek philosophers, that everything was alive and everything is. Everything is conscious at some level. There is nothing that is dead. There is no dead matter. Everything is slowly evolving into higher states of consciousness. Everything is striving to pass through that stage of self-consciousness, because all of life is conscious and moving to higher and higher states. But there is much beyond that state of self-consciousness, because we are told it is beginningless and endless. So we are on this journey, but we are on it together. We are moving in mass. So as the Kuan Yin pledge so states, that none of us will move forward until all of us move forward. That our responsibility now in life, our duty, is to each other, to help each other realize that we are all of that same essence. We are all godlike in potential. We are all kind, loving human beings. And we try to endeavor to bring out the best in each other. And by understanding that we are not separate, what I do to myself. What we do to each other, we do to ourselves. How one of us is treated is how all of us are treated. And now, in this day and age, when our level of communication has broadened, because this is what we wanted to do, we wanted to know the truth. Well, now we're being shown the truth. But it is an illusion. It is not the truth. We are being told a lie. And we've accepted that lie. We are not separate. We are not different. We are the same in essence. We all have a will. And that is what drives us forward. But through our imagination and will, we can create a different world, a better world, based on theosophical principles of unity. and causation, that we are eternally in motion, ever becoming. That's just a brief presentation of what unity means, perhaps, to the student. But each of us are students, and each of us has an understanding of God. We know we've all come to this point by different avenues, but I would guarantee that many of us were exposed to some kind of religious discipline that has taken the truth and adjusted it so that there are more control mechanisms inherent, so that there would be a priestcraft on which to administer this religion. Well, theosophy says that we don't need a priestcraft. We need to develop in ourselves our own perceptions. You know, we are self-existent and self-sufficient. And we have to learn to act that way. And the biggest roadblock to that is doubt. We doubt who we are. We doubt what we can do. We doubt that our kindness can change the world. Our love of other people. Not a physical love, but loving them because they have the potential to save us. Everyone has the potential to save us. Maybe they just need a little encouragement so that they have someone to identify with. You know, we identify with each other, not physically, but through our mind. And that's substance as well. The ideas that we think are substance, but on a different plane of consciousness. But they are substance. And that substance is that divine principle. Everything is that divine principle. It's mind and substance is how the universe is created. Well, what are your ideas on God? You have some. Anyone? Yes, SL.
We all have heard that the first object of the Theosophical movement is to establish a nucleus of universal brotherhood, a nucleus. But it seems that the only way we could establish that nucleus in this world of differences of form, differences of ideas, opinions, desires, ambitions, is if there's a nucleus of universal brotherhood of thought. And so we wonder if that is why it's so important for each and every human being to get a concept of this universal unity and causation, which we can call God if we wish, but to get an idea of that in order to form that universal unity of thought. Unmute, please.
Yes. We cannot go through life if we have not a foundation on which to stand. So we think that's why our parents or our elders tried to infuse us into us a higher purpose or a higher understanding. And I think we think that it comes from what was just communicated, is that there is a basis for life, this oneness, this unity, this principle, would say, that is eternal, is boundless, is immutable, is omnipresent, and that for us to imagine that, imagine what those words mean, we have to expand our consciousness. We have to expand our imagination. When we think of space, having no beginning and having no end. So, our concept of this deific principle is fundamental to our true realization of who and what we are, and who and why we are here, for what purpose. You know, I mean, our consciousness is existent in this self-conscious existence, which is deific in its source. I think we saw a chat pop up. Did someone read that, SL?
Certainly. Yes, this is a chat. If God is love, and love leads to unity, then does self-realization, which is self-love, reveal the fact that we need to love ourselves first to then best love others to achieve unity? So in the end, we are indeed potential gods.
Yeah, we think that's very well put. We can't love others if we don't love ourselves. Because when we love ourselves, it's not on the personal realm, but it's as a being of love, of light, of hope, compassion. SL. Someone has their microphone on and we're getting a lot of back feed. Okay.
Well, the question sort of brings up a chicken and the egg consideration. Is it love that leads to unity, or is it unity, the unity of all, that expresses itself as love? Or are they identical and one does not exist without the other? So even where there is a lack of love in the heart, there must still be that fundamental unity of life, and even that fundamental interconnection with that being with all others, even though they don't feel it in themselves at the time. Unmute, please.
You know, a very interesting contribution is that love is what we are. You know, it's we are compassion absolute. You know, that we can't have compassion if we are not compassion. We cannot have love if we are not love. So that is an expression of the absolute. It is not the absolute. It is an expression of it. It's unknowable for us to know the ultimate, because we are ever evolving beings. Yes, SL.
Well, there's an interesting chat that came up as a follow-up.
Please.
What kind of love is that love? I mean, what do you feel as a feeling when you have this universal love, compassionate love? How do we know it, for example, in distinction to a personal or sentimental type of love?
Well, it's very... the comment is that we love from the earliest of ages, and we love our parents and we love our siblings, and then we go out in the world and we fall in love with others, and we begin to have a rush of emotions with that love, and we have jealousy and all kinds of other feelings arise with that feeling of love. And then we come to realize that love hurts. I don't want that love. Not if I'm going to be chastised on one point or feeling pain on the other. What kind of love is that? Until we come to understand that there's a love that's unchanging. It's sort of like that self-love, that it is, it's that knowing that everything is going to be all right. That you have complete faith in the universe. Because that love permeates the universe. Now, that's not to say that when difficulties will not we will not encounter difficulties, but that is love as well. Being able to confront those things in life which we need to see about ourselves. SL?
So the Hindus have an expression to help us understand that universal feeling of love, that awareness of it, which they call Sat Chit Ananda, which translated in English means being, knowledge or knowing, and joy or bliss. They're not separate, they're all one. So in that state of our being, when we are self-consciously aware of our being as being non-separate from all beings, we spontaneously feel a joy and bliss and harmony and compassion with all beings. So the answer seems to direct us to the idea that this is a feeling of joy, interconnection, bliss, which comes from a self-realization of our being the self of all.
Yes, a contribution projects into the mind of like plugging in to all other life is when our heart is open. You know, it's the feeling of non-separateness, the feeling of inclusion. Parents will identify that with the love of a child, you know, and then the love of a parent, and then the love of friends, and hopefully we expand it to love of everyone. You know, that's universal brotherhood. We know there's others out there.
Mary Ann has a question.
Please.
More of a comment than a question. our English language is really limited when it comes to love. We only have one word for it. And that really limits our concept of it. And I think our love, like, you know, our lovers, our siblings, our parents, that love is of a lower love, whereas our the greater love, I kind of equate with a little bit of faith, maybe, that you know that things will turn out okay. You know, like in the millennium picture, you know, the infinite picture. And also, I see it when I travel. You know, you go to other lands, other cultures, and you experience that infinite love. And it really, it's not comparable to the love that we're taught about. It's a different type of love. And again, I said it's almost like a faith to me, that I just know that I personally am headed in the right direction. And, you know, as humanity, it's manifesting in just these little things that people do for each other. And that's a love. But that lower love, that personal love, it's almost superficial. I hate to say that, but I don't want to sound cynical. You know, but I definitely equate it a little bit with faith.
Well, we think that's quite important, that it is through faith that manifests a lot of things in our life. But when we consider family and friends, and, you know, we haven't been here, well, we have been here before many, many times. And the people who are in our life now that we love, we probably loved them in the past in some form or another. You know, that we are so interconnected that, you know, through faith, we awaken. We awaken to our interconnectedness when we understand that we are pulsating electromagnetic beings. That we are, you know, when we meet people from other lands and other cultures, we communicate on a very different level, because you have to establish trust with someone right away. And you do that by their voice, by their mannerisms, by their eyes. You know, we learn to communicate as quickly as possible, so that we remain safe, for one thing, but to connect with somebody else. And, you know, what draws us together to form that nucleus of a universal brotherhood? Well, these ideas, this unity, MH. Go ahead.
We have a comment and a question. The comment is in response to the idea that familial love is superficial. Well, we know that in many respects, parents would give up their lives for their children if there's a catastrophe or maybe somebody breaking into a house, and we don't know how superficial that would be. But so we just wanted to make that comment. And then we have a question. How do we, I mean, Theosophy has this wonderful idea of universal brotherhood, and we just question how do we, and the idea of separateness. So how do we get this idea across? Because to the rest of the world, because we know that if more people could understand the sin of separateness, the love that comes out of universal brotherhood, how much happier, how much more loving and compassionate the world would be, not only among humans, but among humans and the lower kingdoms. How is there any way that this can be done?
Well, it's being done right now. You know, that whoever carries these ideas in their heart are doing, are expressing these ideas by their very being. The world goes through cycles of change, and we are in a particular cycle. The only thing that we know is that people live their lives based upon the ideas that they hold to be true. So our only thing we can do is try to clear up erroneous ideas by speaking the truth, by being kind, by being compassionate, by smiling when we're not happy or when we're finding it difficult, but to try to ever express the light that's within us. That's how we're going to change the world, by our interaction, by these kinds of interactions. You know, we're sending out electromagnetic waves into the universe, and they do manifest, and they will manifest. So that's why we're not living for today. We're living for tomorrow. We're trying to plant seeds now. Here we are. We find ourselves in this turmoil, in this chaos. What can we do? Well, plant seeds. That's all we can do. And try to harvest some of the fruits that we've planted in the past and share the fruit with each other. That's our only chance, is to be or not to be. SL?
Well, just that Mary Ann has her hand up.
Again. All right, please, Mary Ann.
I don't know if you can see it.
Okay. No, I can't, but go ahead.
Our generation, we're exposed to a lot of global atrocities, and there's really nothing, so to say, that we can do about them. But in our own neighborhoods, our work, our interactions in the grocery store and so on, for myself, if I'm kind on that level, and the smile goes a long way, there's a lot to be said for it.
Yes.
That I personally don't get as overwhelmed as I am with, you know, this week's hot topic of what catastrophe is going on in the world. There's so many, and there's really nothing, so to speak, that I feel that I can do except to bring that in and harness it into my own life, into my own environment. And then I feel, you know, going over to my neighbor, checking on my elderly neighbor, making sure, you know, that she's okay, that she doesn't need anything. You know, that's just an example that we all can do. And that's love, unconditional, and it's kindness. And I think that I'm far from perfect or at that level, but for my own state of mind, doing these little things assures me that we're in the right direction. And that's, again, for myself, it's the only way that I can find peace of mind, is to harnessing it in closer into my circle.
Yes, we all need to work out our own plan, of how to be the best that we can be, or even better than we are now. And that we need to not be judgmental. We need not to fill ourselves, our minds, with chaos. And you know, by filling our minds with chaos, we are easily controlled. So we find the state of things not under our control, because we are paying attention to the wrong thing, to the wrong idea. And as we just mentioned by the last contribution, is that we make the greatest change or the greatest contribution to those around us and where we are now. You know, not, you know, on the world stage or the universal stage, we can only put positive energy into the world, or try to. And every time we watch or are exposed to violence and hatred and crime, it only has a tendency to drag us down and fill us with doubt. SL.
We have another chat. Would you like to read it?
No, please read it.
To explain the power of universal brotherhood, we could all start by putting ourselves in other people's shoes and seeing that if we had the cards they got dealt with, maybe we would be just like them. And in the end, we are them in reality.
Yeah. A very insightful contribution, because it is so true. The adage, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, is a universal application of that. SL?
Yes, we'd like to follow up on Marianne's comment before about the catastrophes that we've witnessed in the last century, and there's nothing we can do about that. When we go back to the ancient sages, they've all referred to this world in which we live, this terrestrial world, as either the mansion of death, of suffering. Even Buddha went so far as to say, life is full of suffering. There's never been anything we could do about it. We're just becoming more aware of the suffering of this level of being because of our inner communication and our technology that brings it home. But it serves a purpose. There is something that we can do. Fortunate are those that do it individually before they get knocked on the head 100 times. And what that awareness does is it forces us out of necessity to seek those level of conscious awareness where there is enduring peace and bliss, where suffering cannot touch us. And the foundation of that awareness is realizing that we're all one, to reach that spiritual consciousness. So what do? Yes, we point out to people that this is the reality of this life, but it's not the only reality. And you can look within or look to your spiritual foundations and find a path to that.
Yes, and there is a path that's been pointed out by generations of seers and wise ones. Well, we welcome you to our upcoming meetings on Wednesday and Friday, and again next Sunday. And we have to remind you that all this work is done through voluntary contributions of time, service, and money. And all is welcome. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you.